We now have a conference that's being recorded. So if you want to listen to it again, or if you miss a meeting, you can call in and listen to the first part of the meeting anyway. We're going to start with the first step. We were going to start with sobriety contracts, but we decided that until you've done a first step in COSA, you really have no idea maybe what your inner circle behaviors are, your red lights. So we're going to start with the first step. We're going to work on sobriety contracts. We're going to work on steps 2 through 12, and then we'll talk about sponsorship at the end of the year. I hope that everybody that's here is at least willing and open to sponsor others when they're done, because that's step 12. Otherwise, you're working an 11-step program, right? So, and it's a gift. Sponsorship is such a gift. The format for this meeting is going to be pretty simple. We're going to have Tucson with us for the first half hour, and we're going to do the introduction to the step. We're going to talk about the step, take questions, discuss it generally. That's for the first half hour. The next half hour, Tucson's going to go to a meeting, and we'll have time to write and then time to share. And it'll depend on the size of our groups, whether we'll break up into small groups or not. There will be homework assignments, and it's pretty much this program is what you make of it. You don't have to spend 4 hours on homework, but I guess if you can possibly spend an hour a week, you'd be doing pretty great. You'll be doing pretty great. Okay, and I want to talk a little bit about the steps working you. I know that we talk about working the steps, but it's been my experience that the steps also work me. For instance, I'm not even working step one. I've just worked step one just recently, but because I was thinking about it and teaching it, it kept showing up in my life. And I'm not hinting or insinuating that God throws bad things in my life because I'm working on step one, but I become very aware, very cognizant of the principles of step one, and I realize, oh, one more thing I'm powerless over. Personally, for me, I love 11 of the steps. I think 11 of the steps are just the best thing since sliced bread. Not so much on step one. When I work step one, I really have to look at something that I do not want to look at. And I have to admit that I am powerless over anything. Because, you know, if you give me enough time, I could come up with an idea that would take care of whatever problem I have. I could cajole. I could manipulate. I could write. I could bat my eyelashes. I could do something to make you change your mind and basically make you do what I wanted you to do. I'm not so good on the weather. But other stuff I still think sometimes that I can do something about. And there's a lot of things that I'm powerless over. I'm powerless over other people's actions and reactions and responses. I'm powerless over everything but my own actions and behaviors. And sometimes there's an element of powerlessness in that. I'm powerless over my feelings, maybe at least the feelings that I get. I might have some control over how long those feelings remain. I can work my program. I can get rid of self-pity or misery. But I'm powerless over whether or not it knocks on my door. Hold on just a second. Okay, scared me. I thought I lost my notes. I want to talk a little bit about the definition of powerlessness and unmanageability. And powerlessness for me is just the inability to change or control. Unmanageability is simply the inability to manage something well. And when I came in, my life was nuts, but I still couldn't get to the point where I said, okay, my life is unmanageable, because I still had some ideas that I hadn't tried, you know? And that definition served me, the one that said that unmanageability means that I cannot control it, I cannot take care of it well. And I could admit that it I could control it, but it wasn't perfect. It wasn't really, really good. I also learned when I worked step one that powerlessness wasn't really the problem, that I could be powerless over something, and I could still be sitting in a yoga position saying om and feeling completely and totally calm and peaceful and serene. It was when I was powerless and didn't know it, didn't admit it, and tried to control the heck out of whatever situation was bothering me, that my life really got unmanageable, that it really got out of control. I want to give you an example of the steps working me. I had a really good friend whose son died on Tuesday. And another good friend's son had died a few months ago. And certainly I was powerless over those two sons. Certainly I was powerless over the feelings that my friends had and the utter devastation that they were feeling. I was powerless over my inability to help them, to make them feel better, to do anything besides be there, support them. And when I look at powerlessness, I also have to look at where I am not powerless. I also have to look at the flip side of the coin. Yes, I'm powerless over what happened, but what can I do? What is in the realm of my control? And I started going into those places where I am just better off not going. And I thought, okay, if it happens to their son, it could happen to mine. And I started worrying it and thinking about it and obsessing about it and trying to figure out, how can I stop my son from drinking and using? How can I stop my husband from acting out? How can I stop? And once I forget that I'm powerless over one area of my life, it spreads. And I start obsessing and trying to control everything because I'm in fear. So I wrote an email to my son, and I didn't hear back, and I'm powerless again. And I called my sponsor, and I told her what was going on, and she said, I suggest that you work on step one. And I was like, son of a gun, that's what I'm working on tonight. I've learned that powerlessness and the admission of it is not a bad thing at all. When it says admit my powerlessness, I also have to accept my powerlessness, and then I'm off to the races. There's a quote that I really like from some recovery literature, and it says, I didn't want to change because I was still comfortable with me. The changing for me comes in steps 2 through 12. But the first real change that has to come in me is that admission that I'm powerlessness, that I'm powerless, and that acceptance that I'm powerless. Once I get that, then I'm okay to change, then I'm free to change. I'm free to change my old behaviors that have never worked for me. I'm going to read the answer to a question in the COSA Step 1 booklet. It's question number 2, and I read it today, and I thought it was important for me to share. The question is, when I consider admitting my powerlessness over compulsive sexual behavior, am I still holding on to resistance? How does this lead me back to the unmanageability of my active co-addiction? And I wrote, I bump into powerlessness over my husband's compulsive sexual behavior and his recovery. When things are good and he is sober, I can calmly say, I am powerless. Because then it's okay to be powerless. He and his higher power are handling things pretty much to my liking. But I flirt with denying my powerlessness over the quality of his recovery. Presently, he has no sponsor. He tells me he may stop going to the meeting he attends every Saturday morning because he can't control the members. He can't make the meeting healthy. That's what I hear anyway. I think I can lead him, guide him, show him, cajole him into working a better program, finding a healthier meeting, getting a good sponsor, working the steps again, this time the right way. But when he acts out, slips, relapses, ouch, then I cannot accept that I am powerless, or I don't, not without a fight. I raise my voice. I use guilt and shame and fear to make him do what I want. I control by attempting to set boundaries that are not boundaries, or to drop comments I think will make him take action. Comments like, "What are you going to do about that?" As I write that, I know it's perfectly okay to ask, but my question brings up anger and fear in me when his response is not right. He must be sober. Fear has everything to do with me falling off my first step wagon. I know that I'm not working a good first step when I'm trying to control something. And that happens to me often, maybe every day, several times a day. But sometimes it's little things, and I have to pay attention to that. I have to pay attention to, what did I try to control today? And I can do that in my 10th step, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. That's all I have on step one. What I would like to do is see if anybody would like to talk a little bit about step one. We have 10 minutes before we hang up on Tucson. Tucson, I'd like to give you the first opportunity. Does anybody want to share on step one?
Looks like we're past, Claudia.
Okay, thanks. Anybody here? Connie? Would you share on step one?
Sure, I'll share on step one.
Not sure what I'll share, but I'll be glad to share. Thank you, Claudia. No, step one for me wasn't as hard because my sponsor kind of had a little buy-in for me because she said the word freedom. And when I told her what I was doing to control my addict, she was amazed at to what lengths I was going and what crazy things I was doing in my thinking and how it affected everything I did and everything I said. And my whole life revolved around dragging his butt up these 12 steps. And when my sponsor told me, "What would your life be like if you were free? If you were free from that?" And I guess I was just ready because it was a lot of work trying to change something I couldn't change and trying to go, yes, but I just have, maybe if I say it this way, maybe if I do it this way. And then it felt good that to have that freedom that, you know, it wasn't my responsibility. It's kind of like it wasn't in my job description, so I didn't have to get judged on it. I didn't have to get graded. It didn't have anything to do with me. And it kind of seemed like a kind of a good escape, you know, because I was so tired of carrying all this around and trying to do what I needed to do to try to keep my marriage together. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of work, and I felt a lot of responsibility on my shoulders. Sorry, Tucson, we just had someone come in the room, so we're going to pause for a minute here. Okay. So anyway, I think that was my buy-in. I just was tired, and I was ready to be free. And so, yes, in a way, admitting powerlessness was scary, but the freedom was really good to just say, you know, I can't control it. And I stopped fighting on it. And then my sponsor was really big, like, okay, you let go of that, but you have a lot of power of what you do with yourself. I went, you know, I didn't like that part. But, you know, then I could start working on me and start doing what I needed to do and actually look for the first time in my life and give up, surrender the fight, you know, this battle that wasn't working anyway. So for me, it was about that key freedom. And when I put freedom against power, you know, taking control, after I've lived it long enough, I usually choose the freedom. I mean, sometimes I try to get in the control, but it's nothing like freedom is for me. It's like bondage in jail. And I don't want to be in jail anymore. I really do value my freedom. And so when I think of step one, it's just like, you know, being free and able to fly. So that's all I got.
Thank you.
Any questions, like anything that's holding you back about step one or any questions?
Hi, this is Beth, recovering COSA.
Hi, Beth.
I just started step one a couple weeks ago or a month ago, I think it was. And I had a real hard time with thinking that I was powerless, thinking it was everybody else that was unmanageable and not me. But I guess what I really loved about step one is just taking one question at a time. And then the freeing part for me, which Connie kind of brought up, was just putting my thoughts down on paper or my pain down on paper that I didn't have to share with anybody yet, but just what did that question really mean to me? And then kind of delving into how do I answer each one. And I started to see the unmanageability. I didn't want to see it before. I still didn't want to accept that I was powerless because I always had to have the answers from childhood through adulthood. So I thought, if I gave up power, then who's going to take care of me or who's going to have the answers anymore? But I thought if I just went through one question at a time, I found it was actually like I couldn't wait to get home to spend 10 more minutes on the next question. So it was just, it was freeing for me to start and hit each question. I really thought it was helpful.